Paul continues his instructions to the church regarding the Christian home or the Christian household. And the last time we looked at this, we talked about the subject of husbands and wives. And today we're going to look specifically at the parent-child relationship. And then next Sunday we're going to deal with maybe what's one of the hardest kind of things to wrap our minds around, because Paul has instructions to slaves and their masters. And we will see what we can learn from that. But this morning we're focusing especially at the parent-child relationship. And dads, guys, you're in the hot seat again this morning, because we're going to be focusing in part on fathers. And this is for you this morning. First of all, let's read Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. In a few minutes, I'm going to paint you a picture of what life was like in the first century Greek culture, Roman world, what the life was like for the family, and particularly looking this morning at what life was like for children and why it's so important what Paul was saying here. We read this and say, well, that seems like a no-brainer. Kids should obey their parents. You know, fathers should be careful not to provoke and exasperate their children. But once you hear the context to which Paul was writing, I think this will have more force for you today. So Ephesians chapter 4, chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And in the parallel passage in Colossians 3, Paul says, children, obey your parents, for this pleases the Lord. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise. And then he quotes that promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. So it's interesting to me that Paul starts off his instruction to the Christian family, particularly children and to their fathers, by referencing the fifth of the Ten Commandments that we find in Exodus chapter 20. Now, he speaks about the fact that honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, and some people stop there and think, okay, this is, I got to teach my kids this. It's the first commandment. I got to teach them to obey their parents. But it's the first commandment with promise. And Paul is referring back to Exodus chapter 20, to the fifth of the Ten Commandments, not the first. And the commandment was for children to honor their parents. And the promise that was given was that if they honor their parents, God is going to bless their lives, and specifically that it may go well with you, that you may enjoy long life on this earth. So if you're wanting to go back and reference during the week, look back to Exodus chapter 20, read the Ten Commandments, and when you come to that fifth one, that's what Paul is drawing from here. It's not the first commandment, though. The first commandment is, I am the Lord your God, and you shall have no other gods before me. Now, I know that in some circles and in some parenting circles, Christian parenting circles, parents are told to teach their kids Ephesians 6:1 as the first thing that they memorize. And so kids memorize, children, obey your parents, for this is right in the Lord. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing to teach your children. As I think about that, I wonder sometimes, is that self-serving to us as parents? If we drill into our kids' mind, this is the most important thing for you to learn and to memorize, children, obey your parents. I think it's more important to teach them that there is one God and that they are to love the Lord with their whole being. So if you're thinking about, well, what's the most important thing I can teach my children? Yes, you should teach them to obey their parents, but the foundational thing is you can teach them and drill into their head as much as you want. You need to obey your parents, you need to obey your parents. And that's not going to necessarily do anything to bring them to know the living God, to come to faith in him, to come to put their trust in Jesus Christ. So just as a word of encouragement that's perhaps a little off topic, but I think actually on topic, the most important thing you can teach your children is that there is one God and that we are to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. So the first commandment was, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. And that simply means there should be nothing in your life more important than the God who created you and the God whom you worship. And Jesus said the greatest commandment is this: you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. So why does Paul say then that obedience is the way that we honor our parents? I mean, he starts off right off the bat, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then he talks about honoring your father and your mother. And I think what Paul is saying is that it's through obeying our parents that that's the way that we honor them. But Exodus in the Ten Commandments doesn't say anything about obeying your parents. And I found that to be quite interesting. And I'm not letting your kids off the hook. And I never let my kids off the hook in terms of being obedient. And so I got digging back in the Old Testament, and I found there is not one place in the entire Old Testament where it says, children, obey your parents. Not one. You can go dig this afternoon and look up in some concordances, and there's not one place in the Old Testament where children are told to obey their parents. Now, there are many, many, many places where the people of Israel are told to obey the Lord, to obey his commands, to walk in his ways. There are verses that say that parents are responsible for teaching their children to obey the Lord and to follow his commands and walk in their ways. But there's nothing specific that says that children obey your parents. And yet here in Ephesians chapter 6, in Colossians chapter 3, Paul says, children, obey your parents. In Timothy, when he's writing about the qualifications for an elder, he says an elder must be someone who manages his household well or whose children obey him. Now, but those are actually the only three references in the New Testament that talk about children obeying their parents. But Paul makes a point in these letters to the Ephesian church and the Colossian church to talk about the fact that obedience is the way that children honor their parents. But I asked myself the question, why wasn't that in the Old Testament? And the only answer I can come up with is that it was a given. In the culture of the Old Testament and the family structure of the people of Israel, it was a given that that children would obey their parents. That was how they honored them. So you needed to teach your children to obey the Lord. But it was a given that in that culture, the family unit was the central of all of the of society, and it was a given that children would obey. Now, does that mean they always obeyed their parents? No. But it was an understanding, and I think you'll appreciate this better when you understand the culture in the first century when Paul is writing. To honor your parents meant not only to respect them, but to value them. And in Paul's mind, it meant to obey what they said. And he says, this is right. This is good. This is what pleases God. Now, on just another note here, and I'll touch on it later, households in those generation, in that day in the first century were at least three generations. You had grandparents, parents, and children. It wasn't like us, you know, you get 18 and you move out of the house and you get your own apartment and you get married and you buy your own house and, you know, you go to a different part. I mean, the family stayed together as a nucleus in the culture of that day. And generally, there were three generations. Now, there was some travel and people moved away. But in a general sense, in the first century culture, grandparents, parents, and children lived together. In fact, in Jewish culture, and this is what Jesus alludes to in John 14, when he says, my Father's house has many mansions or many rooms, and if I go, I'm preparing a place for you, and if I go, I'll come back and get you. That was a picture of a groom pledging to his bride or his fiance, I'm going back to my Father's house, and I'm preparing a place for you, and when it's ready, I'm going to come and get you. Jesus was using an analogy that people readily understood. So a groom would pledge his betrothal to a young lady. They would get engaged in our terminology. He would go back and on his father's property either build a separate house or add on to the house, and then he would go and get his bride, and he would bring her home. So quite a bit of a different culture. And adult children in that culture still had a responsibility to honor their parents. So when, and this puts a whole new dynamic to this verse, when it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right," I think there's some application in that for adult children and their parents. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Well, let me give you a picture, because I think this will help you understand. It's a pretty depressing picture of the condition of children in the first century in the Roman Empire, and this was true for Ephesus. First of all, in the Roman Empire, there was something that was called patrius potestas. That's Latin, which meant the power of the father. And it meant that a father had absolute power over his family. He could sell his children as slaves. He could make them work in his fields, even in chains. He could punish them as he liked, and he could even impose the death penalty on his children, although that rarely happened. The father had absolute power. And in that whole context of that culture, there was no sense of the responsibility of a father guiding or nurturing or protecting his children. The father just had absolute power. When a baby was born, there was a custom of bringing the newborn and placing it at their father's feet. If the father stooped down and picked up that newborn, it meant that he acknowledged it and that he wished to keep it. If he turned from that newborn that they had put at his feet and walked away in the other direction, that meant that he refused to acknowledge the child and rejected it. And quite literally, that child could be thrown out. A letter from the first from 1 BC recorded a husband, a Roman husband, who was away in Alexandria working, and he's writing back to his wife. And in the middle of this letter, he says, "If, good luck to you, you have a child, if it is a boy, let it live. If it is a girl, throw it out." And you think, well, that's absolutely horrible. The marriage bond, as we saw 2 weeks ago, in Roman society had completely collapsed. Divorce was common. People were often married to multiple people during their lifetime. And I'm talking about one after the other. Children were the casualty of that. Having a child began to be considered a misfortune. And fewer children were being born in the Roman Empire, so much so that they had to pass some laws that if you didn't have a child, there'd be like extra taxes and things that you'd have to pay, because they realized that their population would be dwindling because fewer children were being born. Unwanted children were often left at the Roman Forum, where they were abandoned. And anybody who wanted to pick up that child could pick them up, and they would own that child. And more often than not, they were fed and nurtured and raised to be sold as slaves or prostitutes. I reference Seneca, who was a Roman statesman and philosopher. Seneca wrote this: "We slaughter a fierce ox, we strangle a mad dog, we plunge a knife into sickly cattle lest they taint the whole herd. Children who are born weakly and deformed, we drown." And I read that and I thought, oh my goodness, that's horrible. I'm glad I didn't live in first century Rome. That's terrible. We're more civilized today, aren't we? And yet we live in an age where nearly 750,000 babies are killed every year by abortion. 19.7 million children in America are essentially fatherless because of the brokenness of families. Over 400,000 kids are in foster care, 9,000 of them plus in the state of Indiana. Children and teens are being caught in human trafficking and essentially sold into sex slavery. Yeah, we're more sophisticated, you know, we're more, some people would say we've evolved more as human beings, and we're not like those pagans in the first century Rome, but are we that much different? We just have different methods and different means. And so it's into that kind of context where children had no value, where children had no rights, where a child could be discarded at the will of the father, that Paul holds up this different picture of a family, of a Christian home, and he's drawing back on the fact that the family was central and foundational in Jewish history among the Jewish people. And that I think what he's getting at here when he's saying, you know, children, you need to obey your parents because this is right in the Lord. This pleases the Lord. You're to honor your father and mother. I think what he's communicating and saying that is that children are part of the family, and they're also part of God's family. And thus they're called to honor their parents, and the promise follows that it will go well with them. This was a total contrast to the culture of that day. This was, I mean, it may seem, well, that's, you know, people say, oh, we shouldn't tell our children that they have to obey us. No, this was for their good. This was for their good. It was for the good of the family. It was because this was the way God intended for the family to be. It was for husbands to love their wives sacrificially. It's for wives to willingly submit and support the leadership of their husband. It's for children to obey their parents because they're part of this family. They belong. And the home was to be a safe and a protected place where children would be nurtured and brought up to know the laws of God. They would be taught to love God and to honor their parents. This was what was right in contrast to the culture. So Paul's not just being legalistic here and saying, okay, children, you need to obey your parents. He's painting a whole different picture. He did that between the relationship between husband and wife that we saw 2 weeks ago. He's doing that now for the family and for children. You have a place. He's saying, essentially, he's communicating to children, you belong to God's family, and you have a place in your family. And as part of that family, you have a responsibility to honor your parents, to obey them. And then you got to love the Apostle Paul because he freely stepped on people's toes. And I can vicariously do that through him this morning. Why? Paul turns his address to the fathers. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Colossians 3:21, the parallel passage says, fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. And that word means disheartened, or they will lose heart. Other translations say, do not provoke your children to anger. Do not exasperate your children. And for us guys, what if I just said that over and over again this morning? Do not exasperate your children. Do not embitter your children. Do not exasperate your children. Why does Paul have to tell fathers that, especially the first part? I mean, we understand the training part and the nurturing part, but why does he have to tell them, don't provoke your children to anger? Do not exasperate your children. Well, why not moms? Well, I think mothers by nature tend to be more nurturing. Not always. There are some moms, I'm sure, who have been mean. There are some moms who have been harsh with their children. There are some moms who haven't loved their children the way they should. But by nature, mothers tend to be more nurturing. And let's just be honest, guys. Fathers tend to be, and I mean, this isn't a blanket statement, but fathers tend to be more likely to be less patient and more likely to be carried away by anger. And here's what Paul is getting at in this. It's easy for fathers to discourage and dishearten their children by the way that they treat them, react to them, speak to them, and discipline them. Johann Bengel was a Lutheran clergyman and a Greek scholar in the early 1700s, and he wrote this. The plague of youth is a broken spirit. Discouraged by continuous criticism and rebuke and harsh discipline. Some of you probably grew up maybe with a dad that was like that. Maybe some of you have been that way to your own kids. Exasperate them, provoke them to anger, embitter them. And I couldn't get past that statement. The plague of youth is a broken spirit. And you think about how many kids there are in our culture today who don't have a father present in their life because he's either imprisoned or he's bailed out on them, or the family is divorced and the father wants to have nothing more to do with them. A broken spirit. How many young people, I wonder, in our culture today have broken spirits because their dads did not nurture them, but instead were harsh and demanding and critical? And I have to say this morning, dads, and I say this to myself as well, God forgive us and have mercy on us when we have broken the spirit of our children, provoked them to anger, embittered them, discouraged them. And I want to suggest that if that's true in your relationship with your kids, however old your kids are, we need to find a way to make that right. Instead, Paul says, dads are to nurture, to bring up to maturity their children. They're to admonish them, to warn and correct them. They're to train them, to instruct them in the ways of God, to correct them when they steer out of that way. We don't just tell our kids, don't do that, stop it. I mean, I said that more times than I'd care to admit when my kids were young. Just knock it off. Go to your room. Knock it off. You just stop that. Stop doing that. Or maybe we say, stop doing that. That's stupid. But we don't explain why. We don't nurture. We don't admonish. We don't correct. As parents of adult children, of which I am now, we want our children to respect and to honor us. And so we need to nurture, and we need to lead, and we need to guide them in ways that encourage, rather than to embitter or discourage. And I think that we have to be careful that we don't exasperate and discourage our adult children, or at very least frustrate them. And I know the temptation is, I won't ask my kids to chime in on this, but the temptation for me is to think, hey, I've been around for 60 years now. I know all the ins and outs of parenthood. So I can tell you what you should do, or I can let you discover that and then find a way maybe to gently correct. But the tendency sometimes is, even for adult parents, to treat their children in such a way that they become exasperated and sometimes even embittered. I mean, it's sad even in churches that there are families where adult children have become embittered toward their parents because of the way the parents treated them, or parents that have adult children have become embittered toward their children because they don't listen to them or follow their advice. And I think sometimes we can forget that things change from one generation to another. I'm not talking about biblical truth. I'm not talking about godly principles. Those things don't change. But there are things that change from generation to generation. And we find ourselves saying, well, you know, I was never allowed to do that at your age. I had to walk to church in the snow 2 miles and back, and I worked 80 hours a week or whatever. Or I never had those things when I was your age, And it's tempting for me sometimes to think, I got to go out once a year for my anniversary. But things change from generation to generation. I believe that we can try to exercise too much control as parents of adult children, and by doing so, we insult our adult children rather than letting them learn to follow the Lord and to make their decisions. And I think we can forget that our primary role is that of an encourager, someone who nurtures. Fathers, do not embitter or exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, is the older translation, or in the training and the instruction of the Lord. I don't think that ever really ends. I think we have a role, even as our children are adult children, we have a role in encouraging and instructing and nurturing them. I love this story that I read this past week. I'd never heard of this man before, but his name is Benjamin West. He was an American painter that was born in Pennsylvania, and he tells the story of how he became a painter. One day, his mother went out, leaving him in charge of his little sister, Sally. And in his mother's absence, he discovered some bottles of colored ink, and he began to try to paint Sally's portrait. In doing so, he made a considerable mess of things. There were ink blots all over, and there was spilled ink on the floor. And then his mother came back. And she discovered the mess, but she said nothing. She picked up the piece of paper, and she saw the attempt of what he was trying to draw. And he said, "Why, it's Sally." And she stooped down and kissed Benjamin. And ever since that time, Benjamin West used to say, "My mother's kiss made me a painter." Encouragement did more than rebuke ever could. And so Paul says to fathers, do not exasperate, do not provoke your children to anger, do not embitter your children. Those are three different ways you can translate that. Instead, bring them up in the nurture and admonition, in the encouragement, in the counsel, in the training and the instruction of the Lord. Probably you who are dads, the biggest responsibility that you have that's more important than your job, more important than your income, more important than your retirement, more important than your accomplishments, the biggest responsibility you have is to love and to nurture your children and your grandchildren and to encourage them and teach them and instruct them and train them and to do it in such a way that does not, and this is the challenge, it does not embitter them, it does not anger them, it does not exasperate them. How many times have you just, when you've been dealing with some situation, I'm just exasperated by this. I just can't take anymore. What a sad indictment if children in our families are exasperated with their father or with their parents. Encourage them, train them, nurture them. And it doesn't stop when they're 18, and I don't think it stops when they're 30, and I don't think it stops when they're 40, and I don't think it stops when you're 60. I still get counsel from my dad. I'm responsible to honor him. I'm responsible to respect him. And he still, at 86 years old, he still has things to say that are pertinent in my life. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Or the King James says, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. Let's pray together as we close. Lord, sometimes we look around and we see how broken our world is, and we see how sin is so destructive in families and in communities, and we realize that 2,000 years ago it was the same thing. different context, different culture, same issue. The brokenness that sin brings destroys families, and it destroys cultures, and it even destroys civilizations as a whole, as we saw with the Roman Empire. Lord, help us to look at our own lives and to look around us at the circumstances in which we live, to realize the importance of the family, to realize our responsibility as individual families and as a church family, to love our children, to teach them to walk in your ways, to encourage them, to train them. And I pray that you will help us to be an example to a world that is so broken and so hurting. Help us to teach our children to know you and to love you and to walk in your ways. Help us to encourage them and to nurture them and to walk alongside of them. Forgive us when we have embittered them because we have been harsh, or we provoke them to anger because of the way that we have spoken to them or treated them. And Lord, if there are situations, relationships, especially among us who have adult children, that need to be mended, or there's relationships with parents that need to be mended, help us to take those steps that we can encourage and build up and point people to you. I pray these things now in Jesus' name. Amen.